Well, you know what they say, whiskey, then beer, you're in the clear. Beer, then whiskey, sounds like a totally solid plan. This is the Social Club Podcast. And this is the Social Club for the weekend of November 14th, 2014. I'm Josh Rawlerson, and Rachel Carlson works for Yelp Pittsburgh and joins us every week for this little project. Hey, Rachel.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Of course. Where else would I be?
Do you like have a life outside of this
Not
podcast?
Really. Okay. I sleep under the garage in here.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, most people on the South Side do anyway. Let's be honest.
I have a cot under the control board.
I figure. With your little bike. Mm-hmm. And your canteen of coffee.
Eating baked beans out of can. It's
very Walking Dead of you.
Hey, Rachel, you know why we're a good team?
Why?
Because I'm a misanthrope, and I don't go out, but you, like, have friends and social contacts, and you're out there in the world, and you brought some with you today.
I do some things, and I have some people.
Do you want to introduce your guest?
Yeah. So I have Meredith and Wes from Wiggle Whiskey. They are very great partners of Yelp, as well as, I want to say, introduce me to whiskey. Anyway, they're fantastic, and they have a lot going on. I don't know how they stay sane, but they have a lot going on and they're awesome. So that's the introduction.
Welcome, you guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks. It's just our small social contribution introducing you to whiskey.
Yeah. Of course.
It's doing good for the world, really.
It's important work.
Yes, someone has to do it.
Getting the word out. Well, that does kind of get to the first question. What impressions do you find that people have of whiskey, and how do you correct those impressions as needed?
Yeah, so you know, when we started the distillery, we definitely felt like whiskey had an unfair rap, that most people thought the way that Rachel thinks, that it's an old man's drink. Mm-hmm. And so when we set out to build the distillery, we wanted to make sure that it felt like a really open and accessible and fun place for all types to be. And we've succeeded in that for sure. So we see a lot of young folks. We see women. About half of our customers are women.
Nice.
And in fact, half of the distillery is women.
Did you find that was a market that was just waiting to be tapped, or did you have to evangelize a little first?
We definitely, you know, we see ourselves as a place where people come and learn. So we're always trying to make every part of the process and the spirit transparent to bring new folks in. But definitely when we were thinking through the distillery, you know, I spent a lot of time just hanging out in the whiskey aisle of our stores and not
seeing. I get
seeing,
to see you, like, just hanging out.
You know,
I thought you looked familiar. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't see a lot of, you know, at least 4 years ago when we, or 4.5 years ago when we started working on this, you wouldn't see a lot of people like me, you know, hanging out. And in fact, the marketing that existed did not speak to me. You know, I'm not a hunter or a woodsman.
Not yet.
It changes.
Yeah, I have. Well, we don't need to talk. But
can you tell us about the war? Remember Iwo Jima?
But you know, so there certainly seemed like there was an opportunity to reframe the conversation in whiskey, and because it's a delightful drink that all types can enjoy.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
I would totally
Cheers
drink to that.
To that.
Yes, if we were drinking, which maybe we should be. So you guys are Pittsburgh through and through.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about the history of whiskey in Pittsburgh and the local connection. But is this something that's happening nationally? Is there a whiskey revival afoot?
Absolutely.
Yeah, huge. There's kind of like this increasingly enlightened customer base. People are kind of not afraid of it anymore, which is fun. And it's kind of across all demographics, all age groups, all sexes. But yeah, bourbon specifically.
Maybe not all age groups.
Yeah, well, not quite yet.
Hopefully.
Up to
Josh has
point.
Kids, yeah. So I don't think he's going to start.
And wait till they're 12.
Yeah, oh. Right.
Yeah.
No, rock and rag. That's a great thing for little kids with a cough. That's
sure.
The whole Southern thing, yeah.
Put them right out.
All age groups, yeah. Anyway, yeah, all demographics. Bourbon is a huge upswing, and we're noticing that rye whiskey specifically, mm-hmm. this traditional Pittsburgh spirit kind of forgotten thing, especially is on this huge upswing. But we're also noticing that people are increasingly interested in how things are made across, you know, not just spirits. Beer, of course, the craft beer movement. But food in general, people are increasingly interested in where it comes from and how it's made and how it's sourced.
So you're kind of riding this the locavore thing.
Exactly.
Wave a little
yeah,
bit.
Riding the coattails of everyone else who kind of carved the path for us.
No, but I mean, you source your materials locally, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's certainly one of the biggest challenges for us from a business perspective and for growth, because we 92% of our ingredients come from within 300 miles of the distillery, and we're committed to using only certified organic ingredients. So, for instance, last year we used all of the organic rye grains that were grown in within 300 miles of our distillery, and so we had to switch our production when we ran out to different products to keep making things. So we will only grow insofar as we can grow our local farms with us.
Where are they growing rye around here?
Well, one of our farmers is in Avella, PA, in Washington County. His name's Nigel Tudor, and he runs a farm called Weatherberry. We also source some of our grain from Western New York and Eastern Ohio, as well as a professor at Chatham, Alan Matthews. He's growing rye for us at their Eden Hall campus.
Which you do a class. You teach a class, right?
I do.
Yeah, Professor Meredith.
This is educational programming, first and foremost. I insist.
Yeah, so I teach a new product development class to grad students in the food studies program at Chatham. So we actually just released the product that last year's class worked for the year on, which was an apple whiskey, which is a fantastic Pennsylvania product because we are known, of course, for our apples as well as our rye whiskey. So it was a nice combination of the two. It's named Wayward in honor of Johnny Chapman, or Johnny Appleseed, who lived here in Pittsburgh during our whiskey rebellion.
Is that right?
He likely would not have fought because he was a pacifist, but he certainly was producing a lot of apples that were used for alcohol at the time here in Pittsburgh.
All right. Well, let's educate the people. If people don't know what the whiskey rebellion was about, give us a little history lesson.
So let's say you're living in Pittsburgh, 1700s, not America's most livable city at this point.
Right.
Kind of a stressful place to live.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you can relate. Sometimes when you're stressed, a little dram of whiskey will do a lot to take the edge off.
Doesn't hurt.
Yeah. So they're making a ton of whiskey here. They're growing rye because rye grows really nicely in our terrible soil here in western Pennsylvania. And instead of taking 15 barrels of rye grain to market over the mountains, you would distill it into one barrel of whiskey. You know, it just makes it much more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So we had this basis of rye whiskey. But at this point in time, everyone's making white whiskey. This idea of aging it in a charred oak barrel for a long period of time is not a common practice. And that's what whiskey was forever. Now we associate whiskey with being rich and caramely and oaky. Mm-hmm. But forever, it was this clear spirit. So that's what we were making. We were making this rye whiskey here in Pittsburgh. So, of course, first tax in American history, Alexander Hamilton, instead of taxing his buddies in New York City or Baltimore or so on, he decides to tax these frontiersmen, mm-hmm. These crazy people. Johnny Appleseed is a great example of someone who's a little eccentric living here in Pittsburgh. And these guys fought in the American Revolutionary War, taxation without representation. Of course, they feel like they're being taxed without any proper representation. Doesn't go over very well.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburghers, as you guys can certainly agree, we're pretty passionate people. So they express this in a very specific way.
Would the objection have been coming more from the supply side or the demand side? Like, this is messing with our economic system locally, or is this is just getting between us and our whiskey as consumers?
I would imagine it was probably both. You know, the price you had to pay for that little jar of whiskey probably went up, and it certainly made it a bit harder to produce. But really unique in that, you know, this is another example of having to go face to face with your tax collector. There was no PayPal, there was no online tax system. Someone would knock on their door with their hand out,
mm-hmm.
and you had to either pay your taxes or, in this case, our namesake, Philip Wiggle, punched the tax collector.
Oh,
yeah.
How'd that go over?
2-year whiskey rebellion, yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, that's how it's
Why
started.
Wouldn't
yeah.
you name
yeah, right.
Wiggle after someone so badass like that?
Yeah, I wonder if to this day that the liquor regulators that you guys have to deal with have that story in the back of them.
I would hope so.
Tread lightly.
Yeah, yeah.
We're
guys.
A friendly bunch, though.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone.
It's like relations have improved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, something that I think Scott mentioned, too, just in terms of the regulations in Pennsylvania and literally how he has to draw a line down his brewery, mm-hmm. because of the coffee and the beer and just the crazy rules that you have.
Yeah, get Scott talking and you will just hear stories and stories of
stories.
Weird hoops that he's had to
yes.
jump through. Is that kind of your experience too?
Yeah, distilling is, of course, a highly regulated industry, perhaps even, you know, only second to nuclear industry. I don't know.
But way more fun.
But way more fun, yeah. So,
And you don't blow up.
well yeah. So, yeah, there are a lot of hoops. We actually pay taxes quite regularly every 15 days. We fill out lots of paperwork for every label we want to produce. And so it's actually, you know, even from a beer perspective, distilling is a whole different level of regulation. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons, you know, we think that distilling has just taken a good bit longer to enter into this craft realm than beer. It's just the craft beer has been a nice sort of step in the regulatory learning process to get to distilling.
And for you, I was just thinking, oh, who's the person that has to do all the paperwork? And then I'm like, wait, which family member? Because it's all your family that
business,
works
right?
with you too.
Yeah. Luckily, we have both my husband and my dad were formerly lawyers. And so we have some advantage as far as who can understand all this language that we deal with on a daily basis. So whenever I get frustrated with label submissions, I can throw my hands up and
give them to someone else.
Hand it over.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking earlier about your expansion plans and you know, what's involved in getting into these various markets. So there's a little bit of a scandal in the whiskey world over the last year, or maybe it's not new, but it seems like it just got into the popular consciousness that all of these sort of craft whiskeys that people have gotten really attached to are being mass produced somewhere other than where they think they're coming from. I used to live in Iowa. I was there when Templeton Rye was coming up, and you had to like know the guy and wait in line and be at the store before it opened to get one of the 25 bottles that are there.
Right.
And
it turns out
now it's everywhere, and it's.
Yeah. So this is a topic that we've talked about a good bit at Wiggle and around town. And it's something that we feel really passionately about because, you know, we really believe that transparency is at the core of what we do. And that our business only grows with consumer knowledge and information, because that's when people start demanding better products, and that's where we do well, right? Mm-hmm. So up to this point, and really continuing, but it's starting to fade, there's been a lot of brands' margins seem to be built on this idea of consumer misunderstanding or misinformation. Yeah. And we're lucky enough to be a part of a national organization called the American Craft Spirits Association, and we're on the ethics committee for that. And so we just actually wrote up a code of ethics for spirits producers that if you want to be a part of this, a member of this organization now, you have to adhere to. And that requires, it has a truth in labeling clause. And if you want to be a part of this National Association of Spirits Producers, you have to start being honest on your label. So we're doing that from an industry perspective, and then from a legal perspective, some of these brands are being brought to court now. So, and that's, you know, we're not involved in that, but there are class action suits against a couple of really big brands that people recognize who have not been entirely honest about what they're doing and where it's coming from.
It's surprising that, as you're saying, is like one of the most regulated industries, that you have to regulate yourselves on things like that. I would think that would be number one on the list, truth and labor.
Well, I think with that comes what you were speaking to before in terms of people want that education from their businesses, especially with food and drinks now. So, I mean, I witness it every day with Yelp. People are hungry for that information. They want to be educated. And so that's probably why people are being held accountable now, because the consumers are saying, hey, wait, why is there weird things that I can't understand in my whiskey or in my food that shouldn't be in there? Like, I don't even know.
Yep.
Yeah. And my issue here is, you know, my background is in bartending. It was always whiskey bars. So we carried a ton of these so-called craft whiskeys. And it was not an issue for me. My core things are, does it taste good? Is it a reasonable price? Mm-hmm. And do I know where it's coming from? Right. And so the last one is kind of the big question mark with a number of these brands, is they're not being super upfront where this whiskey's actually made, who's making it, where it's bottled, what it's made from, so on and so forth.
On those first two criteria, though, does it concern you that seemingly a large number of consumers aren't able to tell the difference?
Well,
like,
you know,
they're just fooled by the labeling?
No, it makes total sense to me, because last year, the vast majority of rye whiskey, something around 98% of rye whiskey sold in the state of Pennsylvania that are labeled under a handful of brands, were all made by the same producer. Hmm. But there's so many different labels and so much marketing around each of those brands that it's, I mean, it's a mind game, right? One of the big projects that we're working on at Wiggle is trying to restore the sense of terroir to whiskey that exists, of course, in wine and many other spirits. So historically, when Pittsburgh was the epicenter of whiskey making, we made what was called Monongahela Rye Whiskey, and it had a character, right? If you drank Monongahela Rye Whiskey, you knew you were drinking Pittsburgh whiskey because it was the spiciest, earthiest, most robust rye whiskey made in America. And it was different than, say, Maryland rye whiskey, which had a lot of corn in the mash bill and so was sweeter and mellower and less rye-defined, right, than the Pittsburgh style. This is something we're trying to bring back to whiskey, mm-hmm. that Pittsburgh has an identity around whiskey, and it's an identity that industrial facility in Indiana cannot replicate because they're not using our grains, they're not using a pot still, they're not using our process, they're not using our environment to age it in.
I'm just curious how you do this research. How do you uncover these really specific details about the way whiskey was produced in a whole other era?
You know what? There's an enormous wealth of information. And actually, there's a wonderful place in West Overton, PA, where Old Overholt whiskey was produced. Old Overholt was the largest brand of whiskey until Prohibition. And the distillery still stands and you can visit it. It's a museum. They have archives. We're working with Federalists of grain supplies, and we're doing GIS mapping using that to figure out how our agricultural system has impacted how spirits taste and the evolution of the growth of rye grains versus corn. And you can see, for instance, if you look historically, that during Prohibition, the production of rye grains in America just plummets. And after Prohibition, everyone's grown corn. So, of course, that has a huge impact on the spirits that we're drinking and the flavors that we're tasting.
I wonder, do you ever sleep? You've got so much going on. You're so well educated in what you do, and I don't know how you have time to sleep.
Well, I can probably speak for Meredith on this one. I actually sleep a lot, dreaming Wiggle stuff. Yeah, so
dreaming up the next recipe.
I'm working through the night, you might say. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Well, this has been really edifying, but should we move on to like the more fun stuff? Like,
yeah.
Do you guys have some events coming up soon?
Big week.
We have a big week.
Yeah.
Beer week.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
The biggest.
The biggest week of the year. Yeah, this is the first annual Wiggle Beer Week, and people look at us like we're crazy when we talk about our beer week. But, of course, whiskey is distilled beer, so we make beer before we make each batch of whiskey. And if you want to understand whiskey, you got to understand beer, right? So we wanted to celebrate that.
So there's
fact.
More to it than whiskey and then beer.
Yeah.
Wait.
And we also wanted to show off a bunch of our freshly emptied whiskey, gin, and rum barrels, which are wonderful for brewers and homebrewers to use for their batches of magic that they work on. So we have a full week of events starting Sunday, November 16th, celebrating beer in our regional breweries. We're kicking off Sunday, November 16th with a homebrew festival at our barrel house, where 45 of our region's homebrewers will be bringing and sampling their beers in a competition. We have a panel of esteemed celebrity judges who will be choosing the finest homebrew, and we'll also have a People's Choice Award, and the winner will take home one of our big freshly emptied barrels for use in their next homebrew. So folks can come to that and try all of these wonderful homebrews, even if you haven't made one yourself. We will be hosting a cocktail versus beer dinner at the Barrel House on Wednesday, November 19th. That's in partnership with Legume Restaurant and East End Brewing. So with each course that Chef Trevitt Hooper prepares from Legume, we are pairing it with a cocktail made by Will Groves of the Butter Joint and a beer that Scott from East End will be presenting. And folks vote on who wins. It gets a little bit dirty. There's definitely there's definitely some trash talking throughout the night.
A lot of trash talk. Yeah. I'm going to have a microphone, of course, facilitating all the trash talk as much as possible.
I enjoy this.
Yeah.
Lively discussion. It already, trash talk.
Yeah. If you search cocktails versus beer, the hashtag on Twitter, that's already been a fair amount of trash talk.
Will this be trending in Pittsburgh next week? Let's what I want to know.
And we've done this event at East End in the past, and it's one of our favorite events of the year. So looking forward to that. On Thursday, we'll be doing an event with Independent Brewing Company in Squirrel Hill. We'll be pairing four courses, each with one of our spirits, a local beer that pairs well with the spirit, because Pittsburgh, of course, invented a shot and a beer, and vinyl for each course as well. So you'll get food, music, and booze pairings throughout the night there. And then on Saturday, our grand finale is our Goodwood or Barrel-Aged Beer Festival, and that's happening at East End Brewery. We have just about all the region's best breweries coming and showing off their very special barrel-aged beers at this event. So Voodoo Brewery, Penn, North Country, Full Pint, Roundabout, a whole host of local breweries will be sampling these beers that in many cases are single batches that they've been barrel resting for quite some time. So it's a really special event that we're excited about.
Oh, I didn't realize it was special brews that they're
It's
in your barrels.
You got it. It's not necessarily all our barrels, but it's a lot of different barrel experiments. So, you know, the local brew community has just started to really bloom, shall we say, in terms of barrel-aged options. So we wanted to show off what everybody has been up to.
I love that. So exclusive tasting, exclusive ticket.
And we'll be sampling our whims there, some of our latest whims, which are our beer-inspired whiskeys.
I wanted to ask about that.
Yeah.
You're putting hops in there.
Yeah. So we have this new series of whiskeys that we call our whims. Every month we release a new one. And we play with the mash bills, we play with the distillation techniques, all sorts of fun experiments. So the last two that we released in October, we put out a hopped whiskey, which is our wheat whiskey that we vapor infused with three different kinds of hops that Sorgel's Orchards grew for us. And so it produced this wonderful citrusy, grapefruity flavors in our gin basket. And then just recently we released our apple whiskey, which is a blend of our rye and wheat whiskeys that we proofed down with apple cider, again, from Sorgel's Orchard. So
delicious.
In December we distilled, more than a year ago, but December we'll release our mocha porter. Mocha porter.
All right.
It's like whiskey meets coffee meets chocolate. It is unbelievable.
I can't.
That's my whole diet, right?
Yeah, right, yeah.
That's everything.
Now I stalk you guys in terms of releases, so this is
going to change my life. Yeah. It'll be so much more efficient.
I see Josh, like, just dying over these, like, what? I can get a barrel? What? I can get this different whiskey with hops?
And if you can't get to the distillery that often, because we do a lot of fun experiments, we do have a CSA program, which is our community-supported alcohol program, and we actually ship these fun experiments to you every month.
Genius.
Yeah.
I think we have some special cocktails, maybe, for the winter.
Yeah, Wes, you're the mixologist. Is that
I don't use that term, but you can. Okay. Totally fine. It's
what's
complimentary.
I don't know if that's really
it's complimentary for someone else to use it, but whenever you call yourself that, it seems like
you're a jerk.
What's the term?
Yeah.
I call myself the corporate bartender because it's like I'm, know, I'm like a professional, but I'm kind of edgy.
Yeah.
Has anyone seen the Portlandia skit where Andy Samberg is a mixologist?
Yes.
Okay. If anyone has not seen that, look that up. And I think that's like the definition of a mixologist with a mixtape.
So I want to talk about three cocktails today. And they're all classics. Classics are my favorite. But this is my favorite time of year for cocktails because it's not so cold that you only want like hot drinks. But it's also not super warm that your drink's going to melt in 2 minutes.
Right.
So this is like fall sipper season. And the two fall sippers, of course, are Manhattans and Old Fashions. Right. Yeah. Classics. Really simple. They're great because you don't need a ton of ingredients. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about the old fashioned quickly because the old fashioned really is more of a formula than it is a set thing. Mm-hmm. So it's based off the original cocktail. And a cocktail originally was any combination of booze, sugar, bitters, and water. You would dilute it with some ice. So this can be anything. You can make an old-fashioned. We sometimes make it with our Dutch-style gin, which is a whiskey-based gin. Typically, they're rye whiskey or bourbon or something like that. So you're going to need a good aromatic bitters, all your Christmas spices, a couple dashes of that.
You guys make your own bitters, too.
We do, yeah. Also, organic bitters. We're working on some new ones, which would be really fun. Kind of a Christmas spicy one. Mm-hmm. Maybe nice. Chai tea bitters.
Oh, my
like
gosh.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Bitters, you soak a sugar cube. You go to a specialty goods store, find these kind of raw sugar lumps. They're kind of odd looking, but they're really good in a cocktail. Soak it full of bitters. Add a little water. Crush it up with a spoon or a muddler. Big old dram of whiskey. And I love making it with the sugar cube because as much as you want to crush up, there's still a little sugar left in there. Uh-huh. And it kind of sweetens as you drink it.
Nice.
Yeah, very simple. And then, of course, Manhattan's sweet vermouth.
How do you feel about carbonation in an old-fashioned?
In an old-fashioned, a little bit of soda water, right? So I encourage people to drink drinks how they like them. I work for a whiskey company, so I want full potency whenever I'm drinking a cocktail. So I don't add soda water, but it's more than appropriate. The idea of muddling a whole orange slice or a cherry, this is something that kind of got mussied up there in the old-fashioned, right? It was originally sugar, bitters, water. It was called a whiskey cocktail. And then people started adding these orange slices and cherries and so on and so forth. You know, 10, 15 years later, these guys would say, can I get a whiskey cocktail in the old-fashioned? Meaning leave the cherry and the orange slice out of there.
Mystery solved.
Yeah. So this is where we get the old-fashioned.
So there's degrees of old-fashionedness.
There are. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And again, if you like the orange slice in there, if you like the cherry, it's actually probably closer to a Wisconsin old-fashioned. Hmm. There's this small population in Wisconsin that will have old-fashions with cherries and oranges in there and actually a cheap brandy.
My wife is from Milwaukee, and that's exactly how they do it.
And then
it's
sometimes
like a family thing.
They'll top it with Sprite or something like that.
Yep.
And weird enough, a lot of times they'll add a couple olives on a skewer.
Yeah. I was waiting for like cheese curds.
Yeah.
So never that's not in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other one that I really love that's great as it starts to get a little bit colder is an Alexander. You may have heard it as a brandy Alexander, but it was actually originally a gin cocktail. So we're going to have equal parts gin, creme de cacao, which is a chocolate liqueur. You can find it. And then some heavy cream. We're going to shake these very thoroughly, right? And it sounds funky to have gin and chocolate and milk, but trust me, it is a perfect cocktail.
Go along with that.
Yeah.
You guys make gin too.
Right, we do. Yeah, and then shave a little nutmeg on top, and you've got three awesome fall sipper cocktails.
Wow, I see a hashtag forming there.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Hashtag fall sipper.
All right, well, I'll see you guys in a couple of weeks, or maybe I won't.
He'll be so busy with his whiskey barrels and home brews and...
Well, it was really nice to have you guys in here. Thank you for the ideas. Thank you for the history lesson. And thank you for bringing your stuff to share.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah.
Rachel, you want to add anything?
Oh, gosh. There's so many. I think the main point of this is that if you ever complain about not having anything to do in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. We can't help you. We got nothing for you.
You're a liar because it's not the case. There's so much going on. So many cool things with our local companies out here, so I think that, you know, go check them out.
Wiggles open all week. You guys are pouring anytime, pretty much
7 days a week, 10 to 6, and events just about every night.
All right, no excuses.
No excuses.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, by the way, if whiskey isn't your thing, and I don't know why it wouldn't be, but let's just say that's you. There's still plenty to do in Pittsburgh with or without spirits, and you can find details on most of them at Yelp.com, also on WESA.FM. Check out the show notes for this episode of The Social Club, brought to you by Reed Carter. Thanks, Reed. Thanks also to Josh Mobley on Twitter at Josh Mobley Music for supplying our awesome theme music. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.